Hello and welcome. It's Graham Norton here. Thank you for listening to my Virgin Radio podcast with Waitrose. On the way, Melanie Gedroyd shows us how she's gone from comedian to novelist in her brand new book, The Best Things. Michelle Visage and H from Steps share news of their collaboration for heart-pumping track Heartbreak in This City. Erin Kelly brings us up to speed with her psychological thriller Watch Her Fall. And Vernon Kay gets his game face on for his brand new show Game of Talents. But before all of that, here's Maria. Are you brown as a berry already? I imagine you are burnt to a crisp.
I mean, you know, 2 days ago, 3 days ago, I was sunbathing, and now this morning, taking the dog out, bobble hat, gloves, the full works. The weather has gone completely crazy.
It is supposed to snow tomorrow, I think.
Of course.
Yeah, of course.
Why wouldn't it?
I might bring the cushions in.
I think you should. Have you been sitting out this week, Graham?
Yes, I have. Yes, I have. I mean, when was the really hot day? It was Tuesday. That was the day to do it.
Yeah, yeah. But then it went a bit misty.
But then I haven't brought the cushions back in. So I do go out and sit there with a coffee, trying to read a book, but shivering a bit. But, you know, I enjoy it. It's something to do. It's a change of scenery. It's not the inside of my house. It's the outside of my house. It's all good.
Yeah. You know that little song, Maria, that you just played?
Oh, yes.
I spoke to producer Nick in the week, and he sang me that in its entirety. That boy has got pipes.
Well, I did not know that. No.
Yeah,
had
there
his light
you go.
On a bushel. Yes.
I think a background in musical theatre, Graham, you might need to check that out.
Well, the Virgin Radio Christmas party is going to be a thrill, isn't it?
Is there going to be one? Well, she said excitedly.
Well, we've never been to one, but I imagine they do have one. Yes, he's nodding. Yes, they do.
I've never been in the building, Graham, but next week, woohoo!
Is it the week
roll
after?
Roll out the carpet. No, I'm coming in next week.
Oh, is it next week? All right. No, it'd be lovely to see you. Yay!
So cruel, Graham.
I'll buy a muffin. That's what I'll do. I'll buy a muffin and I'll eat that to keep my blood sugar up.
Wasn't it lovely to see Steps on your show last night and the dance routine?
No, because the thing is, that's what you want Steps to be. You don't want Steps to suddenly kind of, you know, be what people might imagine as cool. You want Steps to be Steps. You want them to do those dances, to wear those costumes.
Those costumes. I thought they were great. Michelle Visage looked fantastic in that outfit.
She really did. What I said on the show is true, that like a Steps concert, that would be like being triple jabbed. You have your double jab and then you go to see Steps. That's your triple jab. Triple jab right there.
I think instead of all this 5G nonsense, they should just say, when you get the jab, you get Steps played in your ear 24/7. That would be a good thing to have.
The sound of cars turning around.
Yeah, really.
Hey, I've changed my mind.
And you've got your other wife on today. I mean, that's cruel, Graham. That's rubbing your nose, my nose in it, and yours.
Well, I've got Michelle Visage on today, and I've got Mel Gedroych on, yes.
Who is your other showbiz wife. And people may not know, but when you're in showbiz, you're allowed to have many wives, apparently. It's like its own religion.
It's
so
true.
You've got me and Mel. I love Mel, really.
Mel's written a book, a whole novel.
I know. She's one of those people who has just been productive during lockdown, and that's annoying.
Well, no, I think she wrote it before lockdown. I'll find out, because I read it ages ago. You know the way, that weird thing in publishing where they'll kind of, you know...
They send you books.
Yeah, they send the proofs out. This, I got, I don't know, last summer, I think? So,
well, they send the proofs to you so that you can give a nice quote.
And I have. It was so long ago, I don't remember what I said, but it was complimentary.
This is a book with some words in. I read it. Did you say that?
Yes. A lot of this book made sense, Graham Norton. I followed huge amounts of this story.
I can't wait for my book to come out because you're going to have to do a whole paragraph on the book, on the fly leaf. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, it's good. And the great thing is I could email that to you now. You could include that in the manuscript.
Is that without reading it?
Absolutely. I mean, because...
There might be a whole chapter on you and how you're a fraud and a fake.
Well, that's all right. I'll still support it. I don't mind. Yeah,
you
I don't mind.
You are lovely, Graham.
Well, also...
I love your hair being very long, by the way. I saw it on the show last night. I thought, Graham has verily turned into a hippie.
Well, that or Des Lynam, one or the other.
When can you get to the hairdressers, or are you going to stick with the long, shaggy look, as shall we say?
April the 12th. April the 12th, you are allowed, but because because my last TV show is next Thursday / on TV on Friday. So right. I then don't require a haircut till September when we're back on. So, you know, who knows what I'll look like by then.
I'm thinking ponytail, I'm thinking man bun.
Oh, a top knot would cover a multitude, wouldn't it? Because I could pop it on top of the bald bit at the back. So,
and then also you can get an extra bun, you know, those little sort of clip-in things. You can put an extra bun for bun fullness.
Oh.
I'm loving that idea, Graham. Shall I bring one up next week when we see each other? Something to look forward to.
If you could, do they sell them in a grey?
Of course they do. Nanas have man buns or nana buns.
Oh, yeah, nan bun.
Graham is sporting a nan bun today.
Hey, you, organise yourself, find some letters. Virgin Radio. The letter writers today and a couple of people who give very good advice will be getting some delicious Waitrose & Partners number one truffles. They come in either champagne, dark chocolate or salted caramel. I've got some salted caramel right here, Maria.
That's cruel of you. Save me an Easter egg, please, for next week.
They're gone. They're long gone.
Oh, you are bad.
Can we have a letter, please?
Yeah, we can indeed. Here we are. Dear Graham and Maria, I came out to my family 2 years ago and they all seemed supportive at first. Last year I met someone and after a few months I introduced her to my sister, brother-in-law and niece. My sister hadn't shown much interest in this new relationship and when she met her, my new partner, she seemed quite aloof. The next day my sister sent a text saying that I'd upset her three-year-old niece when she came into the kitchen and saw me and my girlfriend kiss. Apparently it wasn't the kissing, but the level of kissing that my sister found the problem. It wasn't anything dramatic, just a private moment away from the children and me reassuring my girlfriend as she was quite nervous. This was 10 months ago and my sister is not talking to me, saying she needs space. I have since found out that she's trying to arrange outdoor playdates with my son and his dad. How should I respond? My son doesn't speak about them, but they used to get on. I don't want to act badly, but I also don't want to teach my son that excluding people is okay. But he has lost a lot of family members and friends over the past year with similar views of my relationship being inappropriate. My ex is very supportive and equally unsure as to what we should do. Now, that is from Sarah in Stourbridge. Sarah in Stourbridge, that is really very upsetting. And your letter is quite long and detailed. But I just want to say to you, take the kids out of the equation here. The kids really are, you know, innocent bystanders in this. And it's really nothing to do with them. Quite how a three-year-old also could explain to her mother about the level of kissing that you did all these months ago and that it was inappropriate, etc. I find that quite unbelievable, frankly. So really, you have to just take the bull by the horns here and speak to your sister. I mean, we're allowed now to meet up one-on-one. You have to speak to her face-to-face. I would say don't text, don't email, don't call. You need a face-to-face. This is your sister. You grew up together. She may have had some reservations about you coming out and, you know, initially was supportive, but now she's kind of had time to think about it, or I don't know. But this is between you two and nothing to do with the children and who sees who and when they see, etc. You have to clear this up. It's crazy. She should be happy for you. And if she's not, you need to get to the bottom of it and understand why, because this can't go on. 10 months needing some space while we're in lockdown seems crazy too. She's had quite a lot of space. So we need to find out exactly what's going on here. And it's unfortunate that you find yourself in this position, because it should be a happy time that you have become who you want to be, and you hope for support from your sister. But really, talk to her. You have to see her. You have to talk to her. Graham?
Well, I just think there's sort of a lot going on here, because actually it's not as simple as my sister's a lesbian. I think what's happened is that the two sisters were living sort of parallel lives. You know, they both got married, or they both, you know, found a man, and one had a daughter, Sarah had a son. It was all happy families. And Sarah has, you know, smashed the picture frame. And so that's going to be hard for everyone to deal with. If she'd left her husband for another man, I think that will be hard for everyone to deal with. Everyone kind of thought they knew where they stood. They thought kind of things were in place. This is the future. And Sarah went, no, it's not my future. And I've discovered who I really am, and I'm finding happiness in a different way. And that won't be easy for everyone. And that much I get. So I'd say that's going to take time in the end. I think.
But it was 2 years ago that she came out, Graham. I mean, it's.
But that's still a lot. That's still a lot. And also because they haven't been able to meet up. You know, you don't get used to the girlfriend. We don't know who the girlfriend is. You know, she was very nervous meeting the family. Da, 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 da. And also, this is all very new for Sarah. You know, Sarah is going to be finding out how to be a lesbian in that situation, in any situation, because this is a brand new life for her. So I think there's a lot of kind of, there's an awful lot of things going on. I think the sister also saw the kiss. That's what I think. I think the sister was there when the kiss, it wasn't a 3-year-old reporting back. Meanwhile, in the kitchen, I've just seen. So I think she must have seen the kiss. And, you know, who knows? I don't know, Sarah, if you'd been kissing a man, would something have been said as well? I don't know. But I agree with Maria. You've got to talk to your sister, but come to your sister with an understanding of why she might be upset. And it may not all be about you having a girlfriend. It may be about you kind of wrecking everything. That, you know, she thought life was one way and now it's another way.
I know, but Graham, I mean, Sarah in Stourbridge hasn't quite smashed the picture frame. She's merely reconfigured it. But I think what happens then is it throws a light. You know, had she have left her partner, who's very supportive of her, by the way, for another man, that would still have caused upset and conflict, because people in long-term relationships kind of, you know, think, oh, look, excitement again. I've forgotten about that.
No, excitement of a new relationship. I agree with you. So I think that, in a way, the coming out may be a red herring. It's about just, you know, that she did this thing. And particularly if everybody liked the husband, you know, they must be kind of, you know, maybe they don't like the new girlfriend. I don't know. It's very complicated. Let's hope the listeners can help if you've got advice for Sarah in Stourbridge. And the very best advice will get some number one waitress of partners truffles. Nathan in Cardiff says, who snogs their new partner in the kitchen the first time they meet the family? Well, young people, I'd have thought, young people do that because, you know, they're very overexcited. So, yes, I sort of agree with you. I think even if it had been a new man, this is not the kind of behaviour which would have put Sarah in favour with her sister. Say sorry and start afresh. Maybe not apologise. Apologise makes it seem like you did something wrong. And I think it wasn't wrong. It was just, anyway. Christine in Newmarket. This is so sad for you, Sarah. You need to sit down with your sister and tell her how upset you are face to face, and leave the children out of it and find out the root of the problem. And the problem is, you'll never really find out the root of the problem, because if the problem is that Sarah's sister is homophobic, well, she's never going to say that. Oh, you must. Oh, you'll think me awful, but I hate you. So that's never going to happen. Alex in Wales thinks that myself and Maria are being far too kind. We have to consider the possibility that the sister is homophobic, and she needs to be challenged to look at herself and acknowledge this. And that is true. I mean, I think in these sorts of situations, it's often not just one thing, you know. So it may be that actually the kissing did seem inappropriate. It may be that she's upset that she left the father, but also there may be some homophobia in there too. It's all in there. It's not all or one. It's all not one yet. It does sound like there's a lot going on there. Your sister may feel defensive if you go in with reasons why you think she's acting the way she is. So try and handle it delicately, but you very much have a right to be upset. Lydia in Northern Ireland. I'm giving Lydia some truffles for that. That's good, balanced advice. 10 months is a long time for space. You need to ask her why she's avoiding the subject and find out what it's really about. And that's Sarah in Deal. And of course, the other Sarah, Sarah Starbridge, we're cheering you up with some Waitrose number one truffles as well. Dark chocolate, champagne, or salted caramel. You decide. Graham's Guide. Right, let's have a second letter. Quickly, moving on.
Okay, here we go. Dear Graham and Maria, sorry. I have a very dear and close relative who went to stay with her cousin in South Africa for just over 2 weeks. But unfortunately, due to COVID, she had to return home after only 8 days of her holiday. When she arrived at her cousin's home in Cape Town, she gave him £300 housekeeping money, as he had told her they'd be enjoying eating out at different restaurants. But again, this didn't happen due to COVID. Since she's returned, the money hasn't been mentioned. My friend has a low-paid job and can do with having some of that money back. But what should she do? And that is from Jane in Denby in North Wales. Jane in Denby in North Wales, is this you? Has it happened to you? Are you the friend? It seems strange. But anyway, Jane in Denby, North Wales. This was obviously a while ago because, you know, borders have been closed with South Africa, etc. And nobody's been allowed to fly anywhere. So your friend has been pondering this clearly for a long time and not knowing what to do. I'm sort of conflicted about this. I know your friend has a low-paid job, etc. But I think, you know, she was there for 8 days. Are you going to get involved in fractions and percentages and how much has been spent of that £300? By my calculations, there's probably £100 due back, round about that much. I don't know. But is it worth, you know, your friend may want to go back to South Africa at some point when things open up again. And is it worth causing upset when a free holiday is on the cards and there'll still be some money left over from the housekeeping? I mean, that's the way to deal with it. Just go back there, eat them out of house and home for at least 3 weeks and don't give them any more money. I just don't think it's worth sending emails, etc. Nothing can be done face to face about, I know it's a lot of money, but it's also a big thing to sort of say, why haven't you sent me any of that money back? Graham?
Well, look, I agree with you. Jane in Denby in North Wales seems strangely invested in this problem. But I think the main thing is it happened so long ago. So there's no, this needed to be raised as you were getting in a taxi on the way to the airport, kind of going, oh, but also how do you raise it? And here's the other thing. Okay, your dear and close relative may have a low paid job, but flights to South Africa aren't free. However you go, you know, whether you're in cattle or posh, there is no cheap way to get to South Africa. So that was a hunk of change. You know, getting to the airport, getting from the airport to the cousin's house, all of these things cost money. So, you know, £300 was obviously budgeted in for this holiday. So I feel like, yes, there's a little bit of injustice in that the cousin has ended up with a bit of extra cash. But equally, you know, your dear close relative got a week's holiday in the sun. So saw some sun and, you know, got some meals on a plane and a miniature bottle of wine. I don't know. But I think you've just got to say goodbye to this money because there's no good way to get it back. And even if you do get it back, you'll be sitting looking at your, whatever it is, 150 quid, going, was this worth it? Because now there's a cousin in South Africa who really doesn't like me.
That I can't visit anymore.
That I can't give. Yeah, I've now wrecked my free holiday destination. So I sort of agree with you. I would put it to bed for now. And then if you get to go to South Africa again, I mean, if they, if they get to go to South Africa again, then you kind of go, ooh, what's a dinner's on you? Because do you remember I gave you all that money the last time I was here? But even then you sound like a bit of a git. But
I know, really. You just say, oh, I've got some money in the bank, haven't I, from 2 years ago?
And they'll go, what? What are you talking about?
Yeah, cough up. And this time it's gone up to £600.
Yeah, I spent that on pork chops the last time you were here.
They all went to waste when you went home.
Yes, they're still in the freezer. Don't worry, all that food I bought's in the freezer. You can have it now. These sorts of issues, I think, are really hard. If you don't raise them at the time, you know, if you all go on holiday together and there's, you know, people, there's petrol and there's house and there's wine and there's dinners, you've got to do it along the way. Otherwise, afterwards, trying to, you know, get it all together is so hard. Unless you kind of unless one person puts it all on a credit card and then at the end you just divvy it up and then you can do it. But to try and kind of go, oh, well, now I was out.
Oh, no, it's a bit like a restaurant, isn't it? I didn't have any wine. I only had the beef and that was cheap. It's that thing. I've been on holiday with kind of upwards of 8 people long time ago, obviously before COVID. And, you know, you just have to suck it up because you just have to think, OK, this is the sort of holiday I'm on. It's going to be spendy because we're dividing everything by 8. And there's no point, and it drags the life out of everybody if you start saying, oh, yeah, but I didn't come to that thing, or I didn't use any of the wood that was on the fire, etc., doesn't it? It's just maddening.
Yes, I know the story you're talking about.
Well done, Graham. Your memory is suddenly very good.
Well, no, just that firewood story really amused me.
Oh! Stop now.
Okay, we're stopping. If people got advice for Jane in Denbigh, North Wales, Hannah just says, no more trips to South Africa for you. Kit in London, definitely ask. Maybe slide in casually next conversation about planning a trip for the future so they could put that money aside for it for you as you remember paying in. Yes, I see what you mean. You could say that. You kind of go, ooh. You could say, I'm so looking forward to it. And what's great is I've got that money in the bank there because I gave you the 3. You could do that. Yeah. Anyway, an anonymous person says it's too late now to ask for the money back unless they have a close relationship where they feel they could. No better for next time. Yeah. But also, it does seem an odd thing to do to rock up to somebody's house and just hand over 300 quid and kind of go, right, that's it. You pay for everything from here on in. I mean, that does seem like you're at some sort of, you know, resort, an inclusive resort. Does it include champagne? Paul and Beckham. Maybe Jane's cousin always paid for drinks, etc., when going out, and she's conveniently forgotten this. Well, I don't think they were going anywhere. I think South Africa kind of shut things down quite quickly. So, I don't think we should pay for any drinks. It's not the cousin's fault that COVID disrupted their plans. I'm sure they're looking forward to them returning at a future date to holiday again. Yeah, and meanwhile, they're shopping. They're having a lovely time. That's from Nina, Bishop Stortford. Penny in North London, let it go. I mean, that is kind of what you're going to do. This was a long time ago, and isn't your friendship worth more than the money? Think of it as a donation to charity. Forget about it. Life is too short. Draw a line under it and move on. It's a lesson learned. I think truffles. Truffles for Penny. Truffles for Penny. Champagne, dark chocolate, or salted caramel. You decide. I've just had some of the salted caramel. I would recommend.
The Graham Norton Radio Show with Waitrose. You can taste when it's Waitrose.
Virgin Radio.
My first guest of the day has been an entertainer for nearly 30 years, gaining herself the titles of comedian, writer, actor, presenter, and now novelist. The author of The Best Things, Mel Gedroych, joins us now. Hello, Mel.
Oh, hello, Graham.
How are you?
Really well. A little bit on the stressed side. I'm really glad to be talking to you. I've come to the top of the house to our bedroom just to basically get away from everybody. Basically, sorry, do you mind if I offload?
No, please offload. We want it. We want share. It's a safe space. There's no judgment here. Go.
I'm slightly hysterical. So my younger daughter, Visa, who's 17, abiding by all the COVID protocols, absolutely, was in her friend's garden last night. there was some pranking about, I sense. There was a little bit of horseplay. Oh, and she blooming, why she was barefoot, I don't know, but she was barefoot and has cut her foot quite badly. And we're going to have to go to A&E.
Oh, should we keep this short?
No, I've strapped her up. She's fine. She's downstairs. She's eating a pancake. All is fine. But I've been saying to the girls for the last year, the last place we want to be bothering at the moment is the hospital. They've been really good. They've been abiding by all the rules. And now what have we got?
I feel like I'm the jinx because Simon Mayo cut himself while on the radio the other week. Yes, he sliced himself open on some scissors. I think he was in his office. What's in this parcel? And sliced his finger. So now your poor daughter is downstairs. Just make sure she doesn't walk in any carpet. We don't want to make it worse.
Well, do you know what? That's probably what I'm most livid about. There is a rug downstairs. It's a beautiful pastel rug. It's now... It looks like something out of CSI, you know, whatever, or The Killing or something. Oh, I'm a bit livid. I shouldn't be livid. I should be very caring and all the rest, but I'm a bit livid. But thank you for listening because yes. I've got that off my chest.
Well, I mean, you're a mother. Your mother, hear you roar. listen, let's talk about the book. Your book, I read, now often I have to pretend and I sort of, I fudge it a bit and I kind of go, oh yes, it was very good. But I read your book. But of course, I read it so long ago that when I picked it up this morning, I was like, I don't really remember this. So actually, I'm more at sea than I normally am. So remind me, it's Sally Parker is the main protagonist. And tell us as much as you can about the start of the book.
So basically, Sally Parker is our heroine. And she is living life to the supersize max. She's married to a hedge fund manager, Frank. Life is tickety-boo. There are no bleeding feet on their shag pile white rugs, I can tell you. And they've got sort of loads of children, loads of dogs. She's got a beautiful hairdo, an amazing walk-in wardrobe. Everything is going swimmingly. Or is it, Graham? Or is it? Anyway, in a nutshell, and I'm not giving too much away, they lose everything. Everything gets stripped away, all their material goods, their house, everything gets taken away. And it's a story about how this family kind of come together, how they get to know each other. They haven't really properly known each other because they've been insulated by this sort of crazy wealth. And it's a comedy. That's basically the story.
And you're right. It is funny. There are some big comedy set pieces, which are really, really good. But ultimately, it is a book about kind of what's really important. And it's lovely.
Oh, thank you, Graham. I think that's right. I mean, hopefully people, you know, there'll be some laughs along the way. But there is a sort of slightly thoughtful thread running through it, exactly that, you know, what are we if we can't be defined by our bling and our status and our money, then actually what are we underneath it all?
And now I've never been in your house. I'm glad now. I've missed that rug. it's glory days are over. But I'm guessing that Mel Gedridge's house is not like Sally Parker's house. Did you base it on a home you've been in?
Do you know what? I've set it in Leatherhead, which is in the suburbs of London, and I went back to Leatherhead a few times when I was kind of researching for the book. I say researching, I had a lovely day out on my own, sat in a cafe or two and did nothing. But anyway, I went to the Leatherhead Golf Club, which was tremendous. They let me in and I sat there. And then I went round a couple of sort of slightly gated communities, which you get round there, these extraordinary kind of palazzos behind these electric fences. And I did sort of shamble around a bit like a rather lame detective. And I actually got shouted at, a dog walker, a very, very posh dog walker in the full barber and wellies actually shouted at me, which was tremendous, because she saw me there with a little notebook and my phone out taking photos. But yeah, so I did a bit of that. And also, I mean, if you pick up a copy of Hello Magazine, there's often quite rich pickings in there, isn't there?
Yes.
For kind of, you know, the way that, and, you know, I'm not being judgmental at all. People are allowed to live the way they want. But, you know, when you look at a house in Hello and it's got a sort of gold wagon wheel on the wall, you know, you kind of think, wow.
It's the shiny floors. I can, and also, like, so many people have shiny floors. These shiny floors seem de rigueur now.
Yes, what is that? Why? Is it something to do with Strictly Come Dancing? Is there a sort of fad for...
I think more Dancing on Ice, surely. It looks dangerous.
I'll never forget, there was one... Oh, this is years and years ago. There was a brilliant, very feisty piece about Michael Flatley in Hello. It was like a 14-page pull-out. It was amazing. And he had this extraordinary dining room, and he had gold plates laid out on the table with gold knives and forks. And I thought, wow, that's amazing. That's amazing.
And Michael Flatley, he's not shy of an oil painting of himself. He's that would not be too much for Michael. Now, how did you sort of, did you know you had a novel in you? Did you just try to do this? How did you write it? Where did you write it? All of the above.
So I've wanted to write a book for years, actually, since I was probably in my 20s, and then did that slightly embarrassing thing when you tell your friends that you're going to write a book. I don't know if you've done that. And it's 30 years later. It's so embarrassing. And I got to the age of 50 a couple of years ago, and I just thought, look, I've just got to do this. I've been banging on about this for so long, and it felt sort of like the right time to do it. I felt I'm 50. I don't care what people think about me anymore. I feel, you know, a bit more comfortable in my own skin, a bit more, I don't want to say confident, but you just feel a bit more like, actually, it doesn't really matter, you know?
Yeah, you've got some miles on the clock. Yeah.
Exactly, and it's quite quite liberating. So I started to write, and I wrote at home, and I sort of had this vision of myself in a sort of pashmina with glasses on chains and some...
Fern Britain, essentially, Fern Britain.
Thank you. With some herbal tea on the brew, sheer Fern Britain. And of course, I did absolutely nothing. I mean, you do everything, don't you, to kind of distract yourself and procrastinate. I actually started lining drawers with lavender paper, all the drawers in the house. So, do you know what I mean? Anything. Yeah. I started, you know, polishing cutlery like Michael Flatley would. And... No, I just thought, this is ludicrous. I'm going to have to go somewhere to write. So I actually went to our splendid local library every day for about 4 months and bashed out the first draft. And it was brilliant. I got to the library 5 to 9 every morning so that I could be the first in the queue, so that I could get the chair that I wanted to sit in, because I had to sit in the same chair every
day. Of course. That's
really
so
weird.
That is so disciplined of you, Mel. I mean, that's really, yeah, well done you. So well, I guess, I think, yes, treating it like a job will get it done, I suppose.
Definitely, definitely. And also the publishers, God bless them. It was 2 years late, this novel, I'm not going to lie. So I felt, right, come on, we've got to really blooming take this seriously now. So but the library was amazing.
You'd written nonfiction before. You had two books before this. So was this more enjoyable? Did you enjoy, or less, or just different?
Just different, I think. I mean, I felt, oh, because you're essentially, you know, trying to write something that's going to make people laugh, I felt, oh, the pressure was slightly on and ramped up. And I thought, this isn't a kind of just necessarily a disposable thing, like, you know, performing or anything like that. So I felt the pressure was on a bit. But once I got into it, oh, my gosh, I don't know if you're the same when you're doing yours, but I lost myself totally. I loved it. I really loved it.
But I think aiming for comedy is such a hard thing to do, because, you know, if you're writing a sketch or something, you know that you can kind of milk a laugh out of it some way with kind of, you know, a prop or a face or something. But because it's kind of cold and on the page.
It's horrible, yeah.
Because how is channeling your humour into your writing different from TV?
I think, do you know what? I used to write stuff for the radio, Sue and I did back in the day, like 15, 16, 17. Actually, no, what am I talking about? 20-odd years ago. And I remember our producer on that radio show said, you've got to have a laugh a page. That was his kind of, you know, you've got to have a laugh a page. And his words, Jon Magnusson, his words rang in my ears as I wrote. And I thought, I've got to ruddy get a laugh a page. I'm not going to say there is a laugh a page, but that was the aim.
But there's then a tear a page. By the way, Jon Magnusson is probably listening.
He was quite scary. He used to sit in a swivel chair, actually, with a large cigar on the go. And you'd go into his room at Radio 4 and you'd say, oh, morning, Jon, I've got this idea for a running sketch. And he was a bit like Blofeld, but in a very, in a comedy producer type way.
He hasn't changed much. I mean, less cigar now. Less cigar. But
less cigar.
Less cigar, but yeah. What would be your first piece of advice for working in a comedy duo? Is it harder or easier with two people?
I'd say on balance, it's easier. I tell you why. Because if you're having an off day, if the brain isn't quite, you know, kicking in as it should do, then you can always rely on the other person. And if the other person is Sue Perkins, odds on her brain is always in gear. So that probably applies more to being in a double act with Sue Perkins than being in a double act.
Yes, do that. Do that.
But you,
yes,
you have each other's back, I think is what I'm saying. You know, if the chips are down, then it's great to be able to just laugh it off with somebody else. I couldn't do it on my own in that way. Definitely not.
Will we see you at Sue again soon?
So we're just about to start filming, actually, tomorrow. Tomorrow's Easter Sunday. Easter Monday. Oh, Lordy. We're about to start filming Series 2 of Hitmen, which is our show.
Oh, yeah.
So we're doing that. We're going to be in a lay-by being followed by a hearse at 7 a.m. on Monday morning. So we'll be back in our van doing that. So it's going to be fun.
Fantastic. We look forward to that. Good luck with the best things, Mel Gedroych.
Thank you.
Now, put the siren on the roof of the car and get your daughter to A&E as fast as you can.
I feel so embarrassed even going anywhere near an A&E at the moment. It's just dreadful. But anyway, it must be done. And thanks for letting me offload. That's. I don't feel so livid now. Thank you.
There's a hole in her foot. It's very Easter. It's very Easter.
Happy Easter, Graham.
Happy Easter to you, darling. Take care of yourself. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, Mel.
The Graham Norton Radio Show with Waitrose. You can taste when it's Waitrose.
Virgin Radio.
Michelle Visage and H from Steps should be on the line now. Good morning, both.
Graham! Hi, Graham.
Hello, both of you. We must stop meeting like this. So you were on the TV show last night. There was so much love online for the Michelle and for Steps. We must clear up, though. Some people didn't. Lee explained where Lisa was, but H just explained that Lisa hasn't quit or anything, has she?
Oh, absolutely not. Lisa is still very much with us and was there in spirit last night. Yeah, she's just in Dubai, and because of the current horrendous situation, she couldn't make it. But Michelle is honorary member for this period.
And I am honoured. Thank you.
And did you watch it last night, Michelle? Were you very pleased with your dancing?
Graham, why are you acting like that?
No, because you were so good. You were so good at the dancing. You were excellent at it.
I felt like an absolute stepper. I was very proud of myself. Thank you, Graham.
you smashed it, Michelle. Yeah, I mean, you were very much, you've always been part of us. And like I said on the show last night, you manifested this. You did your cosmic order and it arrived. So good on you.
I'm a very powerful witch.
And now, so Michelle has got to guest with Steps. None of Steps have been a guest judge on Drag Race yet, have they, Michelle?
No, not yet.
Oh, that is my dream. Seriously, I mean, the Drag Race has been with me for many, many years through breakups, through children, through to successful relationships. It's my go-to, and it's literally the bucket list show.
And tell me
and
this.
Trust me, I'm on it, Graham. Don't worry.
Okay. And H, tell me this. So Michelle was explaining that she knew Faye because of Strictly, and then everybody's talking about Jamie and things like that. But did you know that Michelle had a kind of this pop background?
I was aware of Seduction, yes, and obviously the Michelle we see today is a very different Michelle to back then. We were rehearsing the choreo for this single, and Michelle was kind of giving us a little Seduction education. So we YouTubed a load of video. And yes. The conversation went to Michelle's nails, which were like 50 inches long. And yeah. What do you do with 50-inch nails, basically?
You keep them in a little shadow box.
Lovely. But yes. You're still a fan of the long nail, Michelle. That, yeah.
I love a long nail, Graham. I grew up worshipping Cher, watching her on the Sonny and Cher show and putting like sellotape around my fingers, acting like I had long nails. I was always obsessed with like old Barbra Streisand movies. There were always beautiful long nails that I never had because I was a biter. So the minute I could stop and go for a manicure and start growing my nails, I did.
And tell me this, because you had, so the album, What the Future Holds, was out. So yes. who decided that Michelle would join on this particular track, Heartbreak in the City? Because obviously it appears on the first version of the album without you.
Yeah, well, we were basically doing the Royal Variety performance last year, and we did an Insta Live with Michelle. And it just came up in conversation. I think I actually said to you, why don't we do a little collab? We would love to do something. And then as soon as Michelle had finished the Insta, our manager went, I've got an idea. And that's basically how the seed was planted and all of the stars aligned. And here we are today. Yeah. And it's the perfect pop marriage. It's just beautiful.
Aww.
It is a great track. It really is. And yeah. And I'm right in thinking Steps have never collaborated with anyone else before. So is this going to kind of open up a world to you where you'll do more of these?
It was a collective collab many years ago. We did thank ABBA for the music for the Brits medley with Bewitched and Billy Piper. But this is something completely new. This is new territory for us. But you know what I would love as well? I mean, everybody knows how fabulous Michelle is. I want this to open up a huge record deal for her because she deserves it.
Oh, H, you're so sweet.
Michelle, you're too busy to have a recording career now.
Well, Graham, I'd like to try.
You manifest it, manifest it. Now, Michelle Visage, you say they're a proud Jersey girl, but you do love this country. Now that your career isn't so much US-based, it's kind of all over the globe, might you ever relocate your family to these shores?
100%. That's the intention. We're just waiting for the girls to graduate from uni. And then once they're out, they can decide where they want to go. But it makes hubby and I very free to finally relocate here and have a proper home instead of the little place that I'm living in now. Yeah.
Oh, that would be amazing.
I know. I can't wait.
But now, does your husband love the UK as much as you do?
Literally cannot wait to be like everything open, pub life. You know, go right at the pub. He's all about the pub and football and everything else. So, yes, he's very, very excited. You know, everything I love, Graham, David loves. That was sarcasm.
That's why you're together.
Exactly. 24 years.
We should also mention, H, that you guys, your big arena shows are going ahead starting in November.
Yes. Fingers crossed. Everything's looking good with the vaccine. So everything is still going ahead. We start in Sheffield Arena on the 2nd of November and tour for a whole month. And we end in Bournemouth Arena. So, yeah, we are super, super excited about that. And we may, just may, have a special guest popping up.
Who could that be, I wonder? Who could it be?
I wonder, how excited would that be?
That would be amazing. And am I right in thinking, H, this wasn't delayed in any way? This was always when the tour was going to be?
Oh, no, actually, completely the opposite.
Oh.
Literally the day before lockdown. No, seriously, we've delayed everything a year. We were all travelling to London. Lisa was coming from Dubai to announce all of the news. And then the country went into lockdown last year. So like everybody in our industry, we've all had to just basically diversify and put our plans on hold. So, yeah, this is going to be one of the first big arena tours to go ahead. So, wow. Yeah, I think everybody's ready for a bit of happy.
It ended up being quite ironic that you called the album What the Future Holds.
Isn't it just?
Yeah, who knows? And Michelle, we should mention that the Queens of Season 2 from Drag Race UK, they're off on a big arena tour as well.
Can you imagine what an incredible world we live in, that these queens get recognized for the incredible work that they've done and continue to do? Can you imagine? This is amazing. I'm so excited for them.
And what's great is it's going up to Scotland. I think they're doing a gig in Aberdeen, aren't they? They've got a big arena in Aberdeen, which will be like a homecoming gig for those girls. It'd be amazing. Might you do a special guest in that tour as well, Michelle?
If I am everybody's favorite special guest, then so be it. That's my job. And if there's an arena that needs me, then Super Michelle will be there.
To the rescue.
That's it. Exactly.
Okay. And how much longer are you going to be in the UK this time, Michelle?
I'm here for 2 more weeks. Then I must go home because I think my children and my husband have forgotten who I am and what I look like. So I will be here for 2 more weeks. Then I'm going home. Then I think I'm back in September.
Because it must be so hard for you. Because you've been away. Because I know you were in New Zealand filming before here. So it's been a long time. It must be very hard to kind of juggle it all.
I left January 4th. And I think the difficulty, I'm working all the time. And I think it's more difficult on my poor husband. So he's FaceTiming and he's like, I said, what are you doing? Last night we FaceTimed. He's like, oh, well, I've got a whole day full of playing with the dogs. And I was like, oh, okay, I'm coming home soon. Don't worry.
Yeah, don't worry. That fun time is over.
Exactly, Graham. Exactly.
And it must be the opposite for you, H, where you're sitting thinking, I really want to leave the house.
Well, yes, because I have been confined. I have twin boys who are 5 year old, and I have questioned my sanity, my drinking habits. Seriously, it's been hard. It's been tough. So, you know, yeah. Things have kind of gone back to normal now because my kids are back in school. 1 more week left of Easter holidays and I can start to focus on myself a little bit.
Lovely. Very good. Well, listen, it's been lovely to talk to you both. Good luck with the single. It's already been at number one on the iTunes thing, so I'm sure it'll go back there. And with the album when it comes out and, of course, the tour. Michelle Visage and H. Bye-bye, guys. Lovely to talk to you.
Bye,
Michelle. Bye. Take care, H. Bye. Take care yourselves. Coming up, Sunday Times bestselling author Erin Kelly shares everything behind her brand new nail-biting book, Watch Her Fall. But before all that, Vernon Kay tells us what we can expect from brand new game show, Game of Talents. Hi, Vernon.
Morning, Graham. How are you?
I'm very well. Lovely to talk to you. It's been an age.
I know, it really has. It really has. But it's a beautiful sunny Easter Sunday morning. I haven't got any chocolate, which I'm really disappointed about because we're recording the show as we speak. I mean, I'm not in the studio, but I'm doing the Alan Partridge thing. I'm in a hotel. I've got to know every member of staff. And I'm a little bit disappointed that I've got my 12-inch dinner plate, but no chocolate Easter eggs.
So you are recording it now. So are you doing them all together and then it starts next Saturday, or are you doing it kind of weekly, or how does it work?
Yeah, we're doing them all together, but they're going to go out weekly because it's a massive, massive show. It's huge. The stage, I mean, it's, you know, the kind of show. It's a big talent show. We've got lots of different sets, lots of different scenes to change around. We're in a huge, big aircraft hangar, pretty much is the best way to describe it. So.
Okay, so listen,
it's really impressive.
So talk us through it, Vernon. It's called Game of Talents. I know it was a big, big hit in Spain, and I think, is this the first kind of international version of it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, we all know those iconic Spanish game shows, right?
Yeah.
So basically, it's called Game of Talents, and it's a game show and a talent show combined. So we've got contestants trying to guess the talents of the performers that come onto the stage. It's that kind of Susan Boyle moment. You know, when you saw Susan Boyle, like, crikey, what's she going to do?
Yeah.
And then she comes out with this amazing voice. It's that big reveal. It's like, well, I have no idea what this bloke from Cheltenham's going to be. And then he comes on and he swallows a 5-foot sword. Do you know what I mean? Something like that. It's really entertaining. There's some amazing guesswork in it. And the contestants can win an awful lot of money. And it's played out really, really well. You know, it's got all those classic nuances of a great game show.
Okay, so tell me this. So one person comes out. Like, you don't have to decide which of these people is the sword swallower. One person comes out. And then
it's one individual, and then we show the contestants a talent board. So on the talent board, there are 8 talents, and it could say...
This is good rehearsal. This is like you rehearsing for tonight.
Yeah. I'm just proving to myself that I know the format, Graham.
Okay, go. We've got a talent board. Okay.
We've got a talent board, and on the talent board, it says something like sword swallower, speed eater, magician, ventriloquist, escapologist, speed hairdresser, all those random talents that you see on shows like... Britain's Got Talent. They're all there on the list. And then one person walks out, and this guy or girl would walk out and say, "Hello, I'm Jennifer. I'm from Shrewsbury. I'm 35, and I'm a part-time nurse. And I've been doing this talent for 27 years. And then all you've got to do is guess what they do.
Wow. But yeah. My takeaway,
they get a clue, though. They eventually get a clue if they choose to play or pass.
Okay. But my favorite bit of that, Vernon, is I now realize I have a talent. I didn't know speed eating was a talent, but hey, I'm there.
Yeah. It's amazing what people do actually class as a talent, Graham. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, you do have 7 shows to fill, 7 hours. Yeah, we're going to run the gamut.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Very funny.
And when you say a lot of money, I mean, do you accumulate the money? Do you, if you guess more than one, do you get more money?
Oh, I see what you're doing, Graham. Format point coming your way. We have a selection of money balls which are randomly selected by our contestants, and in each money ball there's the opportunity to grab between £500 and £10,000, but we'll be adding extra balls throughout the show, Graham. One worth £20,000, the other worth £50,000.
Wow. See, I'm going to rush to the BBC now, and I'm going to make this before next... I'll have it out on Wednesday.
Yeah.
I'll gazump you.
Oh, that's quite nice. I mean, Sunday morning, what better than go through a format?
Hey, but here's the thing, though. So, socially distanced, presumably there's no audience, which makes this, in a way, easier to make?
Yeah, no audience. You know, you've been there. You've done it. You feed off an audience. You know, you get the oohs and the ahs, and you hear the whispering and the mumblings of what people are talking about in the audience. And there's none of that. So the crew, the cameramen and the camera girls, they all play a pivotal role in joining in on the show. And it's been really nice, actually, because it's in the studio. It's made it more personal, you know. But you do miss the energy. You do miss the banter and the back chat from an audience.
You do, but I find I get a bit giddy in the studio with no audience because it's like our parents are away or something.
But it also feels like you're in your front room then, doesn't it?
It does a bit, yeah.
When you're chatting.
I quite like it. And Vernon, because I used to kind of bump into you at kind of showbiz bashes and things like that, but ain't no bashes now.
No,
or showbiz, yeah. So how have you been coping? Has it been lovely just kind of being in lockdown, or have you been going a bit stir crazy?
A little bit of everything. I think the same kind of lockdown emotions. It doesn't matter who you are, what you do. It's affected everyone in a similar way. In that we found ourselves with time on our hands, and then right, what do we do? What can we do? What can we learn? How can we make this thing constructive? And I'll be honest with you, Graham. We became really, really good at Uno.
Oh, right.
We just played loads of parlor games. You know, we're fortunate that we've got an Xbox, and there's loads of parlor games on there that you can play with your family or with you can't have friends around, so it's got to be family.
Yeah.
With the kids, myself and Tess, and lots of games that you can play on your device or your tablet or your phone or whatever, because that kids love that kind of stuff. So we were playing a version of Pictionary on the Xbox, which is really good. And then our eldest Phoebe's got GCSEs, so she's been revising.
Hold back. GCSEs? How did that happen? Where did those years go?
Graham, tell me about
it. That's nuts.
Honest, tell me about it. Yeah, it feels like 5 minutes ago since we were dancing to Barney the Purple Dinosaur, and now we're in GCSEs.
I thought your homeschooling would involve crayons, but I mean GCSEs. Yeah. That's intense. That's a whiteboard.
I, Graham, it's fractions and algorithms.
Over to Tess.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll be in the garden.
Exactly. I'll do the science and sport and PE.
It's very important. Very important job. What was it like coming back from I'm a Celebrity back into lockdown? Because, of course, you did get out of lockdown. You went to Wales and lived in the castle.
Yeah, I missed the second one. I remember... Tess messaged me and she said, "Oh, the show's been delayed a little bit because Boris Johnson's going to make an announcement, and it seems like we're going to go back into lockdown." Because I was in a farmhouse on Anglesey, preparing myself, watching Tess, making sure that she doesn't slip as she comes onto the Strictly Come Dancing stage. But the show was delayed because Boris said we're going into another lockdown, so I missed the second one. So it was kind of weird, but the I can see it now. Phoebe and Amber's faces when I walked through the door when I eventually got home on the Saturday night were just magical. They lit up the room, and Phoebe, very cleverly, she's very savvy. She'd highlighted all my best bits on every episode of I'm a Celebrity on the Sky Planner. So as soon as I sat down, he's like, "Right, we'll cut the wheat from the chaff. We'll just go to your best bits in every episode." So I kind of got an edited version first.
Wow.
And then I watched it all afterwards, subsequently.
That's like a budding TV producer right in your house.
Yeah, yeah. did you like the sky drop there, Graham?
Very good.
I am on brand.
Very on brand.
With Chris's Breakfast Show.
Chris's Breakfast Show Sky. We're Waitrose. We're all about it. We're all about it. Yeah.
Oh, I'll be off to Waitrose for my sushi selection.
Excellent.
A little bit later on.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, sushi at all prices.
Hey, what a revelation, though, having a sushi counter in your local supermarket.
Speak on.
Oh, well, I'm a local Waitrose.
There's a van. There's a van reversing to the door downstairs now with sushi.
No, but I this has gone down a pathway that I didn't think we'd ever end up talking about on a Sunday morning. But our local Waitrose actually has a sushi counter, and they make fresh sushi for you.
Of course they do. Yeah.
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 That's what you get from living in the Shire, you see, Graham.
So next Saturday we start seeing the show, Game of Talents, and are you continuing to film it, or would it all be done by next Saturday?
I think we'll have two or three more shows to do after Saturday. We're not going to change anything because the format is what it is, and honestly, it really works. It's one of those shows that you kind of constantly throwing stuff, commenting and helping, trying to help the contestants, even though you're sat on the sofa. So it's a complete participation show.
And have any of the talents underwhelmed you? Any of the talents like, really? You've decided to come on television and do that?
Yes. I'm going to say yes. And I don't need to explain which one it is, because as soon as you see it, if you watch the show, you'll go, "Oh, that's that person that Vernon and we're talking about."
And very quickly, have you been asked to do Strictly? Because you're tall. You would be good at it. Is it sort of verboten? Can you not go near the dance floor? Or would you ever consider going on there?
If they asked me, I would seriously consider it. Yeah, because I absolutely loved being on I'm a Celebrity. It was such an amazing experience. And people say, you know, the Strictly experience is very similar. But I need someone really tall. And the only, I've said this before, I'd need someone like Ian Waite, because he's like my height. He's like 6'4", 6'5". And I don't think they've got, at the moment, a really tall girl that could kind of carry my posture around the ballroom.
No, you just know you need a little dancer, and then you can do amazing lifts and throw them around. And yeah,
that's like a good point.
Yeah. You'd be like a juggler. It'd be good. Strictly 2021. Vernon Kay, be lovely to talk to you. Game of Talents next Saturday, ITV 7:30. Take care, my friend. Good luck with
the
rest of the shows. I look forward to seeing it. Bye.
Cheers, buddy. All the best. Thank
you. All right. Take care of yourself. Bye.
The Graham Norton Radio Show with Waitrose. You can taste when it's Waitrose.
Virgin Radio.
This person is a critically acclaimed best-selling writer of such bonkers hits like The Poison Tree, The Ties That Bind, He Said, She Said, and now she brings us a brand new psychological thriller called Watch Her Fall. Erin Kelly is her name, and she should be on the line now. Hello, Erin.
Hello, Graham.
Aw, nice to talk to you again.
How are you doing?
I'm all right, thank you very much. How are you doing?
I'm all right too. Happy Easter.
Happy Easter to you. So Watch Your Fall, it's set in the world of ballet, which sort of is the perfect, because it's such a kind of cruel, weird world, ballet. Did you train as a ballet dancer when you were younger, or how did you stumble upon this world?
Well, train is a very generous word. stumble's probably more accurate. Now, I used to do what most little girls did, which was thud around a freezing church hall as a child. And I, it was clear early on that I wasn't a natural, but lots of my friends were, and lots of my friends kept dancing well into their teens. And it was almost like a reality show, where, like the Hunger Games, one by one, you're just picked off for being a little bit too tall, or because suddenly you got a bust, or suddenly you got hips, or, you know, there was an injury, or there was something wrong with the curvature of your spine. There are a million reasons why you can fail as a dancer. And to get to the top, you have to be, not only do you have to be physically perfect, but you need a real psychological toughness and ambition. And you really need to, I mean, ballerinas, they look like little wispy things, but they are hard as nails. Honestly, they're tougher than wrestlers. Yeah. And so it's that combination of super competitiveness and the knowledge that your career can be cut short at a second's notice with, you know, one misplaced step. And, you know, the spotlight can only be on one person at any given time. So my book is about two rival ballerinas who each want to be the star of their company, but really there can only be one of them, and they will both do anything to get to the top.
And also complicated by having a father. I think, you know, that father-daughter relationship kind of makes it just, ooh, so it's just,
yeah.
It's toxic, but I think we all recognise relationships like that.
Yeah, so the Ava, the prima ballerina in my book, her dad is the ballet master. He is the company director. And when in ballet, it's not a group effort. It's not a democracy. You have one person at the top and they're in charge of all the decisions. And that's complicated and difficult enough when you're just a ballerina. But when he is also your father and you can't do anything wrong because you have to be a shining example, then, yeah, that's not going to make for excellent mental health, let's just say, even if it does make you a fantastic ballerina.
And you do a brilliant thing in this book, that thing you do where it's not quite an unreliable narrator, but it's, we see events unfold more than once. I mean, I think some events in here unfold three times, and each time we find out more, we see it from a different angle. How hard is that in terms of planning it and stuff? Or because you do this, so have you learned a trick? Have you learned a way to make that easier?
No, it never gets easier, but there is a way to do it, which is to not expect to get it right first time. So this is my, you know, Watch Your Fall is not my first time at the rodeo. I'm eight novels in now. So even though it gets harder in some ways, because with every book you've used up new twists and new ways of doing things, what I have realized is the way I make it work with twists is to do a very messy version, and then you go back and you rework it and you rework it and you rework it. And I'm very careful to never lie to my readers. But what I will do is I won't tell them something important, and I will lead them down the garden path, and I'll make them assume that something else is the case. And that is something you have to do at a word level. I mean, you almost have to think of yourself as a detective. And every time your characters are having a conversation, you have to say, okay, so how can we make them say things they would naturally say, but I can't skate too close to blowing the surprise in the middle of the book? And you just keep doing it. But basically, when I write it, you know that emoji with a kind of surprise face where it's got a sort of mushroom cloud coming out the top of the head?
Oh, yes.
That's me when I'm plotting a book like this.
Well, it seems so effortless. It's brilliant. And you really do not guess what's coming. I mean, it's great. So you've kind of flirted with the small screen. The Poison Tree was on ITV. And then you did that odd thing of turning Broadchurch into a novel. You brought it kind of back the other way. Now there's such an appetite with all these streaming services, and not just kind of ITV and BBC. Are any of your other books in the works?
I've got a couple of irons in the fire, but it's always, you never believe anything until first day, you know, until the cameras are actually rolling, I think. So nothing concrete, no, but.
And did you enjoy your experience on The Poison Tree, or how involved were you?
Oh, I loved it. And I wasn't involved because I took the decision when the book was optioned to think of it completely as nothing to do with my book. and to think, to hope it worked as a drama in its own right. Because I think if you go down the other route and say, well, they, you know, that person's got the wrong hairstyle, or you'll find it was actually set in a different postcode to that, then you can drive yourself bonkers. So the best description I ever heard about the option process is that you throw your book over a high wall and the producers throw a bag of money over the other side of the high wall, and then you both run off in opposite directions. I learned a lot working on Broadchurch about screenwriting and how it fits together and how it's a different way of storytelling. So I would like to write for the screen. I'd like to see what it's like to turn a book into a movie or a TV show, but it would have to be, I'd need a good year's distance from the book being out, I think. You need a good objective eye, and that's hard, yeah, when it's something you've only just finished.
And actually, one of the things I really appreciate about your writing is, because often when you read thrillers, you sort of feel like the person writing it is really just hoping that someone's going to adapt it into a film or a TV series. And reading your book, it is such a book. You know, the story works as a book. You're not thinking, oh, I could watch this on telly.
Well, no, you're probably thinking, congratulations, Erin, you've written a book that's got such a psychological twist in the centre that it's impossible to adapt. So no, if ever a book was not written with one eye on the silver screen, it's this one. There is always a way. I certainly haven't thought of it yet.
I mean, I guess what's weird is writers who are disciplined, has it knocked their discipline, if you know what I mean? Because obviously you know, you're a full-time writer, you're dedicated to this. Has it been hard to concentrate, or has it just been the same?
No, it's been horrible. So first of all, it's very hard to concentrate. Just, I mean, at the beginning, just watching the numbers go up and the grief and the worry and the loss. So it's, you know, there are some news stories you can harden yourself against. This one I couldn't, and I found it difficult to read anything, you know, longer than a tweet for a long time. But the big difference for me, I mean, working from home is no, that hasn't been a culture shock for me, but I've got two kids and I am even less of a natural primary school teacher than I am a ballerina, it turns out. And so that was the big difference to me. No, it was really, really difficult. So I got around it by getting up at 5 o'clock most mornings and trying to get my work out of the way before the kids woke up, and then just being unbearable from about 6 p.m. onwards.
Wow.
Fun times, yeah. Fun times in my house.
I liked all that thing with parents in the homeschooling. It was like, it turned out it wasn't the teacher.
It really wasn't.
It turned out it was them. It was them. So are you working on a new book, or can you have two, you know, when you're promoting a book, I guess your head is still full of these characters in this story, or are you able to kind of move on?
No, I am deep into another manuscript, but I always take the couple of weeks around publication away because I'm not going to do anything meaningful. It's I almost have to revise Watch Her Fall because I'm so full of the new book that I'd almost not forgotten what happened. But, you know, I had to give myself a little crash course in that book and think about ballerinas and that kind of thing, because that's what I'm talking about right now. I'll go back to it after the Easter holidays. I'll be good having a break.
But for now, it's the dance. It's all about the dance. Watch Her Fall. Watch Her Fall is the new psychological thriller from Erin Kelly. It is out in hardback now. A pleasure to talk to you. Go back to Easter eggs or hot cross buns or whatever you're up to. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. Take care. Bye.
You too. Thanks for having me.
Cheers, Erin. Bye. Thank you so much for joining me for the Graham Norton Radio Show podcast. I'm back on Virgin Radio from 9:30 on Saturday morning with Waitrose. Don't forget, the next episode of the podcast will be out first thing the following Monday. Chat to you then.
The Graham Norton Radio Show with Waitrose. You can taste when it's Waitrose. Virgin Radio.